We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, back over there in New York City, my man, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm great. Obviously, I live a fantastic life with a fantastic family and friends and co-host a wonderful college football program with a terrific friend in Ty Hildebrand.
It's all true. It is all true.
And something I've learned is that life is about decisions and figuring out what's best for you. And we went back and forth on this a good amount. And we've done the premier conferences. And I'm glad we can shine a light on the SEC now. I think that's something that's important for us to do with the audience that we have to spotlight the lesser.
We thought about just going Sun Belt today, maybe a little American Athletic, maybe the MAC, because MACtion is so much fun. But alas,
we've done a lot of Big Sky research.
The emails have come in fast and furious for SEC content. So this evening, following in the template of our previous shows, Dan is prepared to answer some prodding, pulsating, thrusting questions about the SEC West. And here I am over here where I'm ready to talk about the SEC East.
Penetrating actually serves an actual vocabulary function in that context. So
only sometimes.
You really could have gone with that. Yes. So, so this is how it works. Explain, please.
Here's the way it works. Dan has written up seven questions for my seven SEC East teams. I have written seven questions for his SEC West teams, and we're going to have a conversation instead of reading through capsules. We're going to have a conversation about all 14 teams in the SEC. Mm-hmm. That being said, we've done a bunch of other ones now, so go back and check those out if you haven't had a chance to already. Get yourself prepped for week zero, which is apparently now more of a thing as we've got Florida and Miami this coming weekend. But also, we should just point out very quickly, we did two live shows this past weekend. The first was in Dallas, Texas at the Alamo Draft House. And the second was at Union Stage in beautiful Washington, D.C. A ton of fun to get out there, meet Verballers, do 2 days worth of fantasy things, which I think went over pretty well. Sound right?
I would say so. Yeah, I had a blast. I know you had a blast. We were with Taylor, who did an incredible job for us producing the shows. The venues were great. The listeners were even better. My only, not regret, but the only thing I wish had been a little bit different, I wish people had done the nerdiest thing possible and not just introduced themselves as like, hey, I'm Trevor. I've listened to the show forever. Really appreciate the show. I really wish they would have been like, hi, I'm Armados on Reddit. Yeah. I really wish they would have also given us
You can't give away the handle, though, Dan. You know that.
You can't give away the handle? That's a thing?
You can't give away the handle if you want to be, you know, a big-time interneter.
they're at a, it's a live show. And I feel like that adding a handle to a name for whatever reason, like we met Ken Greeley, not a handle, an actual name at the DC show. And he's been a mainstay on social media. And we've talked to him forever. It was great to meet him because I could put, oh, face to the name. But for some people, I don't see faces, whether it's Twitter or Instagram or Reddit. And it would have been nice to still like hear,
yeah,
I am, you know, Coach O's accent on, yeah, Reddit or
my
whatever.
My name is Mike, but my Twitter avatar is Ernie from Sesame Street, right?
That makes it easier for socially inept people like you and I. So
it was a ton of
fun. Next time, do that, people. It helps dumb people like me and Ty.
It was a ton of fun. It was hectic, yes, an awful lot of travel. Our intention is to put that show out at some point on Sunday. So what we'll be doing,
single mega show, right?
Yeah, we'll be doing a single mega show both days, okay, smushed into one on Sunday. We will be posting, I believe, a group of five preview-ish or something, yes, on Tuesday morning.
I think it'll be called Group of ...five questions. And we will ask big questions and try to dive in as deep as we can regarding those questions.
And then on Thursday morning, in time for everyone's commute, we'll have our week one preview as we get ready for the start of the college football season.
Yeah, and maybe that'll be juggled a little bit. I don't know what your schedule is with the secret day job, since there are Thursday games, and I think the thirst will be pretty unquenchable. Mm. We'll see if we can shift things around, but we're going to do our best.
All right, don't forget, you can subscribe to the show on Apple, yeah, Podcasts or anywhere you can get your podcasts, really. We're pretty much out there. You can also email solidverbal@gmail.com. Look us up on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. We've also got a subreddit at reddit.com/r/solidverbal. That's where you can hang out with other verballers who like the show. Mm-hmm. They will be there all season long. They've been there all off season long as well. It's run by our good friend Peter over at the subreddit. Met him
at
in
the
DC,
subreddit.
Right?
And I saw that some of the people on the subreddit were trying to figure out if they live near each other, because sometimes you don't want to watch college football alone. And so maybe you make some new college football buddies. So if that's you, if you are looking for somebody, head over to the subreddit and figure out if you can meet some new college football pals.
On that note, shall we get rolling?
Let's do that. Whoa.
Let's close out with a little
double foghorn.
A little boat race to close things out.
Yeah.
As we said at the top, I am in charge of the SEC East. Daniel, you are the commissioner of the SEC West. I would like to start with you, if I could.
Let's go in my direction.
Daniel, let's start with LSU. LSU's kind of a trendy pick this year. A lot of folks like LSU. They went 9-3,
yeah,
won the Fiesta Bowl over UCF, and they had a really good year. They had an offensive line that didn't put in the best showing, mind you, but they basically had to remix their whole offense on the fly to account for it. Mm-hmm. How confident are you now in 2019 that that line is going to improve and they're not going to have to scheme around it?
Pretty confident. But I think it's hard to separate scheming around it and the line itself. And, you know, we've seen it on various levels where we're not positive how good the line actually is because of the system they're running. You know, on the biggest possible level, people seem to think the Patriots have a good offensive line in the NFL, but Tom Brady gets rid of the ball in half a second.
Right.
It doesn't matter how good or bad the line is. But with the way LSU runs an offense, and I tend to check this pretty often, Tom Brady not the starter for the LSU
Tigers. That was going
to
be my question, if Joe Burrow has assumed some Brady-ish qualities.
Not to my knowledge. Happy to be wrong. So you are right. And overall, last year was a very, very good year for LSU. Down day, I think it was at Florida. Great win against Georgia. We all know they finished with that 7 overtime wild loss to A&M. They obviously finished strong also with a win in the bowl game against UCF. Offensively, my answer to your question about the offensive line, which has a good amount of promise inside, tackles are still a decent size question, is they hired Joe Brady, who comes over. He was an analyst for the Saints. He's now the passing game coordinator for LSU. And the thing that he has promised, that, you know, Ed Orgeron has talked about Joe Brady bringing to LSU, is that sort of quick passing game, you know, bringing in RPOs, getting rid of the ball quickly to mitigate any sort of issues that the offensive line may have, which is, I think pretty good news. Joe Burrow struggled at times in big moments. Fourth quarters and third downs were not his thing. He made plays in big moments, but consistently he had issues. He had issues, moments and issues, which is, I think I bought that album in 2003. And
sure.
It made me very sad. More good news for the line is running back gets deeper. John Emery comes in, intriguing five-star, true freshman. And there's a ton of talent out wide. So getting rid of the ball, one, seems like a great idea. And two, the ball is going to, I mean, we saw Justin Jefferson emerge last year, total dude, but there's a ton of talent at receiver. So I imagine that this is going to be a net positive if Joe Brady is who he says he is in terms of scheme. So I'm looking at the offensive line as less of an issue. And which is great news because very strong along the defensive line. They are getting healthier and much stronger at linebacker. Good shape at corner, even without Greedy Williams. Grant Delpit might be, you know, if he's not the best defensive back in the country, he might be the best defensive player in the country at safety. They've recruited really well there. So you're right in focusing in on offensive line. Schedule-wise, it is strange. They go to Texas early.
I'm looking at this now. This is a weird... Yeah. They do have that game against the Northwestern State Demons on week 3, it looks like.
So you laugh at that. They're going to beat Northwestern State. Breaking news. But they have Utah State, and that's at the start of a Florida, Starkville, Auburn, bye week, Tuscaloosa, pretty significant October, early November. And that Utah State game, they're going to probably win that game.
You're thinking look ahead is what you're thinking.
That's a Jordan Love. That's a good team.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to be what they were last year with Gary Anderson. But it's a trickier group of five game that LSU has not always gotten itself out of, Troy. So,
yeah,
I'm intrigued by LSU. I think best case scenario, offense improves. Defense still looks good. They lose to Bama and one of Florida, Auburn, A&M, Mississippi State, and go 10-2. Worst case, I don't think they can get worse than 8-4 with what they bring back.
8-4, I think, has got to be the floor here.
Yeah, that's losing tight ones, and the offense still has trouble running the ball. That's all I can see happening.
All I really want to know is, because of Joe Brady's now presence on this team, are we allowed to call the wide receivers the Brady Bunch?
If they prove to be nickname worthy, yes.
Okay. You know, I want to keep track
I do like
of
the names there
throughout the course of the year.
It's more of like we are shoehorning in the players to make the nickname happen because
right.
we love the nickname rather than the players earning it. So let's wait on that. But I would be optimistic if I were an LSU fan, and we'll know pretty quickly going to the Hornet's Nest that is DKR week 2.
So floor for you, 8-4. You're feeling 10-2?
That's the best case scenario. Yeah, I think it's between 8-10 wins. We saw the close games last year. If they can pull those out once again, they're in a good place. They were, you know, they were an overtime away from 10 regular season wins last year.
Yeah, that's right.
It's not unthinkable that they are right there again.
They've recruited well, too. We'll see what they can do this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shocker.
Yeah, shocking. Where are we going next?
So because you didn't start out as with the clear favorite.
Yeah.
In your conference or in your division, let's go to Florida.
Okay, let's.
Let's go to the Florida Gators as I bring up the question that I came up with about Florida, my curiosity that I had a couple days ago. When I look at the Gators, they threw the ball in 2018, they win. They don't throw the ball well, they don't win. With the good of a full offseason and the bad of a new offensive line, how high, and this is inspired by Michael Scott, how high can Felipe Franks fly?
Okay. Well, so Florida went 9-3 last year. It was a really good first year campaign for Dan Mullen as head coach at Florida. I think by and large, people were happy with that. I think it's likely that Felipe Franks takes another good step forward. Regardless, he improved dramatically in year one under Mullen, finished with something like 24 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. That was up dramatically from the previous year. Physically, we know he's got the tools. He's a big kid. I think the next step for him is some combination of better accuracy and decision making. And it did seem like he was on the right path last year. I do feel like he will improve regardless of the offensive line. That being said, if we could focus on the line for a second, you know, this offense as a whole doesn't have a whole lot of gaps. The line really is the thing to watch. In many ways, this is one of the easier previews we're going to do. This blurb here is what I found very ominous, and I stole this from the Athletic's football preview for Florida. Quote, Florida ended spring football with Mullen all but posting a, quote, help wanted sign outside the door of the offensive line room. After the spring game, Mullen said Florida was, quote, absolutely in the market for a grad transfer to help the offensive line.
Yeah.
Now, look, I may not be the most talented X and O's guy.
Right.
But that is generally not a good thing to hear. I understand he needs depth. I understand you could bring in a grad transfer. They might
need bodies.
Start.
Yeah.
But you need bodies. You need bodies, especially in the SEC, where point of attack is everything. Otherwise, the offense is loaded. The defense is loaded. My problem is the line. I think that has something of a limiting effect, as well as the schedule. Because this team could be significantly better than last year and still finish with the same 9-3 record. Have you seen the schedule?
I have it in front of me right now.
They open up.
What are your thoughts?
They open up this weekend against Miami in Orlando. That will be a tough game, especially given the fact that Florida has some deficiency along that offensive line, and that does happen to be one of Miami's strengths.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Miami wins, but that matchup in particular could pose for an interesting sight for college football fans.
I'm seeing the spread as, and I'm not putting you on the spot in a picking, because I don't think you've deep dived the specific matchups in this, but I'm seeing it about Florida favored by a touchdown, 7.5, somewhere in that range.
That feels about right to me.
And it hasn't really moved a lot.
That feels about right to me. I would be inclined to go Florida, if only because, you know, it's a neutral site game, so I think that's pretty much a wash. But Florida just has more coming back that I feel confident about, and they don't have a brand new starting quarterback.
Correct.
But that's neither here nor there. Here is the schedule. Florida against Miami, neutral site, or in Orlando this weekend. And then to close out the year, they're at home against Florida State, longtime rival. Mm-hmm. In between, they've got road games at Kentucky, at LSU, at South Carolina, at Mizzou. They've also got the big neutral site game against Georgia. I'm sure there are other teams I'm missing, but you get the point. This is a very difficult schedule. If you looked at it from start to finish and tried to work out in your head where are the wins, where are the easy wins, where are the losses and the close losses, 9-3 feels about right to me, even though I do think Florida is going to improve on a number of different fronts this season.
Yeah, I think the up and down recruiting of Jim McElwain will hurt a little bit this year in terms of depth. I think a lot of the frontline starters, especially on defense, are comparable to where Florida has been. There's higher level draft type talent, but it's the rotation guys. It's if somebody goes down where I think there's going to be more drop off than usual. So hopefully for that sake, Florida stays healthy. I think you're right to be concerned with the line, especially with it being such a make or break seeming year for Felipe Franks with the talent he has around him. They have good receivers. They, you know, they're deep at running back. There's a lot to like about this Florida team, especially with Dan Mullen running things. I'm worried the cocktail of, and this is almost similar to Joe Burrow, of a dubious line and Felipe Franks situationally in big moments against the better teams. He really struggled. And I'm looking at the top 100 passers on third down last season, and he's not on the list. He is not one of the top 100 passers. His rating was 100 even, which is not at all good. And he completed 44% of his third down throws. So that to me is the major jump in Felipe Franks. What does he do as they get to midfield and they're down three in the middle of the third quarter, where it seems meaningless, but ultimately they need those drives to give the defense rest and to put pressure on opposing defenses. That's huge to me.
Yeah, and I mean, we've had this conversation about Felipe Franks time and again. Is he good? Is he not good? Last year, he was better.
Yeah.
And I think he
looks the part, as they say.
Absolutely. He's got all the tools physically to be very, very good. Hopefully, another year under Dan Mullen will help him get there. That would only serve to benefit the Florida Gators.
Correct. All right. I think they're close. You mentioned the Miami game. They have Tennessee at home. They're looking to avenge the Kentucky loss. They're going to Lexington for that. Auburn at home. They're in the Bayou at LSU. South Carolina's a road game. Obviously, Georgia's neutral site, but Florida State is at home. So not perfect. The Mizzou game, I think, is secretly really difficult.
Yeah.
But all in all, it seems to even out in terms of trickiness, I would say.
Why don't we go to Mizzou next? You got a Mizzou question handy?
You know I do. I love me some Mizzou. Sort of. I love me except for the biggest story about Mizzou.
Sure.
I love all of the peripherals except for the nucleus. So the clear question to everybody and to me is Kelly Bryant good enough, Clemson quarterback transfer, to make a good Mizzou program that should have been 9-3 last year because they won that Kentucky game, whatever, I don't care. Don't talk to me. Is he good enough to make a good team really good? To me, he seems stuck in traffic between great backupville and good starter town.
Good starter town, huh?
Yeah, I don't think he's quite it's the Britney Spears song. I'm not a girl yet, not a woman. Great backupville, good starter town. Where is he on that interstate?
All right. Well, first off, not to bury the lead here, Mizzou can't play in the postseason. They cannot. Excuse me. They got a 2-year postseason ban back at the end of January. So
yeah,
even if Mizzou has a miracle season, and honestly, it might not be that much of a stretch that it occurs, but even if they were to go on and win the SEC East, they can't play in that conference championship game. All right.
Yeah.
That aside,
a tutor did too much academic tooting.
Correct. Too much tooting. Yeah. That being said, I think, and I'm hedging a little bit.
Okay.
As long as Kelly Bryant is just a smidge closer to good starter town, I think that bodes really well for Mizzou, Dan.
There are a number of reasons externally to believe he can be.
He can be an efficient passer. I think he's shown that. He hasn't always been the most consistent, but he's shown moments of brilliance, moments of great efficiency from his time at Clemson. I think he's got good enough wide receivers out wide. He also adds a dimension with his legs that you would think would give the running game a boost. And it should already be a pretty good running game, by the way, because of Larry Rountree III, who had a great second half of the season last year and really came into his own. The line in front of all of them is extremely, extremely experienced. There's a lot to be excited about the Mizzou offense. And I would not want to sleep on them as a team that, you know, could get to 10 wins. I think it's entirely possible. I don't know if it happens, but I'm looking at the schedule here. Mizzou could very easily start off 8-0 before they get to Georgia in November. I think it's all there for them if they want it. The problem that they have to overcome is twofold, really. First off, they got to find a way to rush the damn passer. I don't know if you saw the numbers on them last year, but 108 in the nation in sack rate.
Yeah.
And you got to do better than that. I don't know if they find a way to get Cale Garrett more involved, but there's only so much one linebacker can do.
Yeah. And sack rate doesn't tell an entire story, obviously. There are hurries. They're forcing into bad throws that are interceptions. There are all sorts of things that are productive that don't get registered in sacks. But it's a starting point. That was where Mizzou's defensive line was for all of those years. That's a pretty big come down.
And the second thing that I would point out, and this isn't really a tangible thing, but I was really struck by, after reading all the previews about Missouri football, how many fans, how many writers, you name it, talked about just the seeming like jinx of the Tiger football program.
Oh, yeah. Fifth down, for sure.
It's very strange. And unless you go in and read about it, it might not be apparent, but there is sort of like this old English, like, woe is me quality with the Missouri football program. They're afraid that they're going to do something stupid. I hope this is not the year, because I really like Missouri's talent. I think they're outstanding. Mm-hmm. Barry Odom's done a great job. He's had an immediate impact on that defense in his time there. Despite some ups and downs, this is a really good football team. Might only be third best in the SEC East, but that's saying something. I'm going to go right in the middle, Dan. I'm going to say 9-3. I think it's either between 10-2 and 8-4. And I'm more inclined to go right in the middle and say 9-3 for this team. I think they're very good.
I don't know how much you talked about this, but their schedule rules.
Their schedule's great. 8-0, right? Look at the schedule. Look at their first 8 games.
Yeah, you mentioned the 8-0.
Yeah, before they play Georgia on, I want to say, November the 9th.
Yeah.
Those are 8 winnable games, dog.
Yeah, they have both sides of the Neil Brown. So they have West Virginia and Troy. So Troy with a new coach, West Virginia with a new coach. They go to Laramie, which is not the easiest thing in the world, but Mizzou should beat Wyoming. Yes. They host South Carolina. They host New Ole Miss. They travel to Vandy. It's always great to travel to Vandy. You get a win and you get to go to Nashville. Kentucky on the road. I'm not penciling in anything. That was a strange game last year. And I think Kentucky should still have a pretty good defense. Georgia on the road's tough. And they get Florida, who they just ran away from last year, and Tennessee at home before finishing in Fayetteville. That is a lovely, lovely fall if you're a Mizzou fan, no matter the postseason ban. And I know they're still trying to appeal it, I believe. My question as it goes back to Kelly Bryant, with good receivers, good running back, maybe the best, or I think pretty clearly the best tight end in the conference in Big Albert O.
Oh, yeah.
How much do you look into Mizzou, or how much do you look into Kelly Bryant when you see what Clemson was able to do with Trevor Lawrence, with the overwhelming majority of the Trevor Lawrence experience being, well, he's a transformational quarterback. Of course, he's leading a very good offense. But when Kelly Bryant was leading that offense with many of the same pieces, with this incredible receiving core and deep running backs and experienced line, they were significantly behind.
It's true.
Where 2018 was.
No, it's true.
I can't put that all on Trevor Lawrence being sensational. And it came to bear when Clemson was playing some of the better teams on their schedule that culminated with Alabama.
Well,
so,
and I, look, it's,
that has me worried.
It's a fair point, Dan. It's a fair point.
He's a subtraction. Yeah.
It's a fair point. I suppose it's why Kelly Bryant transferred and not Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and then why Trevor Lawrence felt pretty good about showing up in Clemson. Yeah.
Exactly. So there you go. I'll go 9-3 for Mizzou.
Hope he has a good year. Hope he does.
All right. Let me ask you a question here.
I'm ready.
I want to talk about Alabama.
Okay.
They went 14-0. Before their secondary got scorched. 347 yards, Daniel, against the chosen one, Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
That's not the norm for Nick Saban, right? We can agree on that much.
Yeah. Take.
How deeply do you read into that performance? And do you think at all it might be predictive of what we see this year in 2019?
No. And I think you are honing in, and I'm going to as well, on the secondary specifically. If there's any one thing with a full roster of coaches being turned over year that you can count on, it's that Nick Saban's Alabama secondary, when healthy and when stocked as he would prefer, is going to be a strength. All you can really do, and we've talked about this ad nauseum, all you can really do to take advantage of the Alabama secondary is have three incredible and tall receivers that can win 50-50 battles downfield and a quarterback who is fearless enough to keep going to those guys. And there have been like four of those guys total in the last decade, quarterback-wise and with those groups of receivers. So short of that, which it appears their entire schedule is, in the regular season anyway, I think their secondary is going to be fine. They're healthier. Trevon Diggs hurts his foot last year, and he's out for a number of games. They have, it's sort of not, patchwork is too extreme a term, but they were putting guys in there that were a definite tick below the talent level that Alabama's used to in the secondary. And I think with the upperclassmen who have been rotation guys in years past and being healthier, you know, whether it's Xavier McKinney or Trevon Diggs, they're going to be in a great, great place. The pass rush should be very good and healthier. We saw those linebackers go down last year. So the combination of a healthier pass rush, the experience in the secondary, Nick Saban being their de facto defensive back coach. And here's the list of quarterbacks. Quentin Harris, promising at Duke, not terribly worried right now. Jake Bentley, Matt Corral, Kellen Mond, who I do like Kellen Mond's receivers. Jarek Guarantano, I like his receivers more than I think I like him. Joe Burrow, kind of the same. Whoever starts at Mississippi State, it's still a battle at the time of this recording. Tommy Stevens and Keaton Thompson.
Sure.
And Bo Nix with decent but not killer receivers at Auburn. So that cocktail, I think, has enough. So pass rush improvement, health, experience, and those quarterbacks, they're going to be fine. They're going to be totally fine there. I don't have a big place of concern other than miscommunication, another year of like a full slate, new staff, Dylan Moses is sliding inside full time at linebacker. Raekwon Davis is a name everybody knows. They have just a ridiculous defensive line class coming in. They lose a couple big names at offensive line, but there's still a good amount of starting experience there. And then they have the best receiving core in the SEC. So,
yeah. Yeah.
And the best quarterback. I'm curious about running back. Najee Harris is the guy now. And Trey Sanders looked like he was going to be the backup, number one running back in the country as a recruit. He hurts his foot. He's out for the year. So they don't quite have the Harris Ranch situation that they had recently, but that is the ultimate nitpick. Alabama does not have, to me, a glaring problem anywhere.
Give me 10 seconds on Tua Tagovailoa, because here's why.
Yeah.
If we do the Alabama preview without mentioning him by name...
Yeah, that's fair.
There will be angry Alabama fans, and perhaps with good reason. So 10 seconds,
yeah.
Starting in 3, 2, go.
I'm never super thrilled with Sark being back in control, and I really like the combination of Loxley and Gattis last year. I don't think there's going to be a big step back. I just think it'll be different. He'll be fine. Best case, everything clicks, 12-0. Worst case, depth behind him, not great. I still see them winning double-digit games, even if Tua's not there. He's Heisman caliber.
All right. Let me give you another one here.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject, you did mention Bo Nix.
I did.
Bo Nix is now officially the starting quarterback at Auburn. Gus Malzahn made the announcement. It did seem like Joey Gatewood was more the kind of running quarterback that you're used to seeing under Malzahn, but he decides to go with Nix. Mm-hmm. Also a dual threat kid, maybe a better passer, more of a newcomer for sure. What do we expect now, knowing that he is the starter? What does that look like as we move forward into 2019? Is it better than what we saw last year?
I think it'll be better, but not necessarily because of him specifically. Because the big offseason talking point has been Gus Malzahn has reclaimed control of the Auburn offense. And he did so in the Music City Bowl against Purdue? And we saw Jarrett Stidham totally come out of the funk that he seemed to be in during the regular season and put up a bajillion points on what I can only assume is an amazing Purdue defense. Bo Nix is going to be good for Auburn. Will he be full-on good this year? I think at times. I think it's a tough ask for a true freshman to go in, even with him. I think he was 5-star, the number one dual threat, blah, blah, blah. I think he has a pretty high ceiling. I think that much is clear. As a dual threat, as a passer, if Gus Malzahn feels better about him than somebody with a little more experience and physically in a better place, because I think Bo Nix is about 6'1", 200, solid, but not huge, not, you know, Cam Newton. Jarrett Stidham was a disappointment last year, and that concerns me a little bit about Bo Nix with all of the experience that Jarrett Stidham had. They were awful at putting together longer drives. They did not generate big plays, and now Anthony Schwartz, I think he's considered to be like the fastest man in college football at receiver. He runs track for Auburn as well, I believe. He's hurt. He hurt his hand, so early on he might be out or limited. The defense was really, really good up front last year, and they may have the best defensive line in the SEC this year. But linebacker is enough of a question to me that I am worried that the offense is going to have to outscore teams. They're in decent shape behind the linebackers in the secondary. The schedule is not great. They have Oregon week one, who should have a good defense. They travel to College Station to take on A&M. They go to Gainesville, they go to Baton Rouge, and obviously they have Georgia and Alabama as they do. So at least those games are at home. Their upper limit to me is getting breaks, 50-50 luck with the true freshman quarterback and Bo Nix. I lean towards 9-3, but I can understand everything's on the table every year with Auburn. And so I'll say 10-2 is the best case scenario.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I like it. I do like
it. They flip-flop every year, so I can't fully defend it, but when you have the combination of, I'm not going to say quarterback and defense, but when you have a combination of the guys on the defensive line, Derek Brown, Marlon Davidson, you know, Derek Brown's All-American, top 10 NFL pick caliber. So when you have that kind of disruptive potential at Auburn with, you know, the good version of Gus Malzahn's offense, it's hard to ignore that ceiling. So I'll say 10-2 if everything breaks right with a true freshman quarterback. Worst case is 7-5, more of the same. You know, you have the dangerous defensive line, but you still can't run consistently like they couldn't with Booby Whitlow last year. They lose the close ones and, you know, frustration mounts on the plains.
I think there's more variability in their final win-loss record.
So do you think they could go all the way down to, what, 5?
No. I think you've got it right. I think 10-2, 7-5.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's a pretty good disparity, but I do like it. You also bring up two things that, in light of our fantasy things draft, mm-hmm. we should put on the list for next year, because you'll remember we started this year's list right after we got done doing last year's show.
Mm-hmm.
Two very important things. A, the player that runs track. And it's just a blazer.
He does. Okay, I'm actually literally looking this up right now. Anthony Schwartz appears to run track for Auburn. And in this still picture, he looks very fast.
The player that runs track, and also the coach who either gives away or takes back control of the offense and play calling.
Ah, track speed. Yeah, that's the phrase, track speed.
All right.
Add it in there.
You got it. Where are we going next?
Let's go to Georgia.
Let's do it.
Let's go to Georgia just because they are more interesting than the attention or lack thereof that they've received, to me.
Okay.
My general assumption is that Jake Fromm plus just out of this world recruiting and recent results, you know, they're a bad fake punt away from perhaps winning the SEC championship last year. It means that a double coordinator replacement slash promotion shouldn't be a huge deal. More of the same. Can you confirm or deny that after Jim Chaney goes to Tennessee as offense coordinator and Mel Tucker to Colorado as their head coach?
I will confirm on defense with Mel Tucker.
Okay.
And I will neither confirm nor deny on offense. And here's why.
The ultimate PR move.
It is. Mel Tucker, defensive coordinator, went to Colorado as head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Kirby Smart promotes Dan Lanning from within. Mm-hmm. He's never been a defensive coordinator before.
Right.
In a lot of cases, that might be bothersome. In this one, I'm okay with it because Kirby always has a hand in the defense anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, they'll be fine. Where I'm a little bit more concerned is on offense. Jim Chaney goes to Tennessee. He's a new offensive coordinator for Jeremy Pruitt.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Kirby Smart promotes from within. He gives a job to James Coley. Now, do you remember James Coley from his time at Miami?
Mm-hmm.
He was on the staff of Georgia last year.
Yeah,
that stint at Miami.
State, yeah.
Yeah, that stint... with Miami from 2013 to 2015, had very mixed results.
Mm-hmm.
Very mixed results. And the other thing that I read, kind of as like the cherry on top of whatever concern I might already have, they apparently want to be more pass heavy this year.
Which makes sense.
It does, but it doesn't.
Why?
It does because you got Jake Fromm, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the nation.
Demetrius Robertson.
It doesn't because you've basically got an entirely new wide receiving core.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean somebody can't step up, but it really is an area of unknown quantity, unknown promise right now. We don't know what we have at the wide receiver position for Georgia. I assume they'll be good, but can they carry a more pass-happy load? I don't know. And the other reason it doesn't make sense is because if you look at what Georgia has coming back, sure, they've got an all-world everything quarterback in Jake Fromm, but they're really good along that offensive line, and they're loaded in the backfield. So one thing that I was saying to people as we were doing our live shows and as folks came up afterwards to talk about Notre Dame and Georgia and all things college football, what I fear when Notre Dame plays Georgia is that Georgia's just going to run up the gut.
Yeah.
They've got the manpower to do it. It's an area of weakness, the spine of that defense for Notre Dame. I would think there are a lot of other teams outside of Notre Dame that Georgia could just do that to. They could run the ball 45 times and go 10-2. So I'm very curious. I don't know how I feel about James Coley. He's got more talent now on Georgia than he did with Miami, and that will no doubt play a factor. But if in fact they veer too much away from a ground game that I think could be really good with DeAndre Swift and Zamir White and who knows whoever else, and try to work it in or force feed it to a brand new wide receiving core, could work. I don't feel as confident in that.
Does what Georgia lost, both coaching wise, offensive wise, with big names out wide, with what they lost and what Florida has retained, I guess, is that a closer game? Like, do you see these teams as being closer as programs because of, you know, the natural attrition and changes to their programs with Dan Mullen having another year in that seat and Georgia, you know, finally having to deal with something that major programs have to deal with, which is other teams wanting their coaches and, you know, their good players leaving early?
I mean, maybe marginally. I still feel like the gap between Georgia and Florida is pretty wide.
Okay.
And Dan Mullen got off to a really good start, but Georgia has been recruiting gangbusters since Kirby Smart got there.
Yeah.
So I feel pretty good about them with every position, really. A ton of talent. The defensive line is no exception. They just need to play better. Not to be too unscientific, but they got some new faces. They got a gel. Last year's run defense wasn't great, gave up over 4 yards a carry. That's something that I think they can improve upon. And really the same story with their defensive backfield. Again, ton of talent, just need to step up their game, take it to the next level. Even marginal improvement will make them a much better defensive unit. So I really like Georgia. I'm all in on Georgia. I have questions about what this offense looks like. I have questions about who ends up stepping up, if somebody can step up out wide, and you know what that defense is going to look like on the front end and back end. These are medium-sized questions.
Yes,
you know, if we've got a gigantic question about Kentucky or, you know, Missouri, whoever, I don't have a question quite of that magnitude for the Georgia Bulldogs because they're going to be just fine. They're the odds-on favorite to win the SEC East. I think they will win the SEC East because they've got an incredible stable of football players coming back in 2019.
Yeah, early on, I'm going to pay attention to the first month and a half, to situational numbers for Georgia. They were good on third down, but not particularly good in the red zone last year. You know, maybe James Coley is an improvement with play calling when it gets close. Georgia was not particularly good either in the red zone defensively. Maybe it's a situation where getting in new eyes, fresh ideas is a good thing for Georgia as they try to get over the top. And it's really just a matter of not dumping a game against a good team during the season and getting over the Alabama hump in the postseason, if it comes to that.
Okay. Where do you want to go next?
This team to me is crazy intriguing just because of progress, not necessarily ceiling. The past couple of years, Tennessee and their defense has been below average, and their offense on the whole, real bad. But this year they have a workable non-conference schedule and most of their tough games are in one stretch. So which side do you see between offense and defense making a more noticeable jump? I guess that'd be the defense to above average or the offense to sometimes competent.
I think the answer here is offense.
Okay. Why?
They need to stay healthy along the line, which was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But Jared Guarantano, they've got the backfield.
He's only a junior.
Only a junior, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Has found a wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
A backfield led by Ty Chandler, who was pretty good last year. A wide receiving core led by Marquez Callaway and Jawan Jennings. I think there is so much room to improve on that side of the football that may not exist on the defensive side, primarily because there's turnover.
Mm-hmm.
The defense, if you really look at it, it gets stronger the farther back you go. Up front, they lose 4 guys. At linebacker, they've recruited really well, but they're still trying to build depth. And in the defensive backfield, that's the real teeth of their defense, where they've got 4 returning starters, including Bryce Thompson, the freshman all-world everything from last year. Tennessee went 5-7 a year ago. In looking at their schedule now, knowing what they have coming back, what do you think is their upper ceiling?
They should be a bowl team. They should be 6-6, 7-5. I think they should be flirting with that at the very least.
See, they've got a road game at Florida. They're home against Georgia. They're at Bama, which is never easy. And they're at Kentucky.
I mean, that's annual, yeah.
And they're at Kentucky, which we'll talk about Kentucky in a little bit, but tricky game, right? So I don't know how I feel about this Tennessee team. They're primed to take a step forward in many respects, but in many others, they're still building under Jeremy Pruitt. I liked that they played hard last year. And you know, I've said this about a bunch of teams previously, And I know you make fun of me almost every time I do it. But when a team comes out there and plays hard, that tells me that they're buying in to what the coach is selling them. If you get enough buy-in, that's how you show growth.
Would you say that that would make them champions of life?
It would make them closer to being champions of life.
Okay. Effort.
For sure.
Yeah.
So I like the direction of the program at the moment, but the SEC East as a whole has gotten better this year. Mm-hmm. And I still think they're kind of a bit away from being to the point where they're competitive. They could scare the bejesus out of people, though.
Yeah. And the other team they have in the West is Mississippi State, who should be real good, especially on defense after putting up a top 10 national defense last year, even with what they lose. There's a lot of, so it's Georgia State, BYU, Chattanooga. Let's assume the best of Tennessee exists those first 3 weeks of the season. They start out 3-0. After that, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi State, Alabama on the road. The bellwether to me is going to be South Carolina.
Right.
They've lost three straight, I believe, to Will Muschamp and the Gamecocks. And if they are in a place where they have turned a corner, they should beat South Carolina at home. I think it's around Halloween. And then at UAB, they finished tough at Kentucky, tough at Mizzou, and a Vandy game that they should be over this hump by now.
South Carolina thinks they're poised to take a step forward.
Yeah.
They think they're ready to do great things. I think Will Muschamp said they're going to accomplish things the South Carolina program has never accomplished before.
Yeah, they lost that game close last year, Tennessee, and then comfortably lost to Mizzou and Vandy to finish out the season. Last year, very nice win against Kentucky that I know got both of our hopes a little higher than perhaps they should have been in November for the Vols. But yeah, I imagine the Jim Chaney thing, offensive consultant, we call him that for a reason. I think he gets HR in order. Shipping is going to be a lot more efficient. Everything's going to be happening in a positive way for Tennessee's offense that wasn't before. Good enough? Not sure. But I think it's going to be in the right direction. They'll be in a bowl.
I agree. Let's move on. I want to talk about Mississippi State.
Oh, I can't believe you went there. I'm so excited.
Since you brought it up. First off,
yes.
Is it safe? And I'm assuming it isn't because of what you said in the open.
Yeah.
Is it safe to assume that Tommy Stevens is going to be the starter?
I think so.
Like what?
Again,
what,
we're recording this.
Yeah, what percentage without it being announced. Would you put on that?
73.
Okay.
Quarterback is difficult. You mentioned Florida saying we're open to grad transfers. Different at quarterback, and I understand the Tate Martell thing at Miami, that just because you transfer to a school and are eligible doesn't necessarily mean you're starting. But Joe Moorhead knew what he had in Keaton Thompson pretty clearly. And to bring in Tommy Stevens, who doesn't have a lot of time to play, is kind of a message. I know he's recruited well at quarterback. There's some young, intriguing talent there. But it feels like he wants to take advantage of the talent on hand on offense as much as possible. And that didn't necessarily mean, yeah, we're just next guy up. He's the guy. Because Nick Fitzgerald was the guy last year.
Right.
And it doesn't give me, I know Keaton Thompson was hurt. I know there were injury issues. It doesn't give me a great deal of confidence that the best guy for the job last year was the worst quarterback in the SEC. So it makes me think that Tommy Stevens is going to be the guy. Now, both of these guys have not proven anything in terms of consistent high-level play. So that's worrisome. But I think either one of these guys will be in a good position. The receivers are back. They've got big dudes there. The line is in pretty good shape. Really like Kylan Hill in the backfield. Defense should be... I really like this defense, even without Montez Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons gone. I think, there's enough talent inside along the defensive line. Linebackers in a great place, with Errol Thompson. They're replacing starters in the secondary, especially at safety, but there's good options there with experience. So you're right to say, is quarterback the biggest question? Because yes, it obviously is.
Can I pause it for a second?
Please do.
Here's how I know you're drinking that Mississippi State cold brew.
Oh my gosh, I definitely am.
You are sipping that Mississippi State cold brew.
Yep.
You didn't even let me ask the second part of my question.
Oh, what's the second part of your question? I was just...
I know, clanga, it's okay. Clanga. Dan, it's okay. Yeah. We're all friends here.
Fair.
The question is, if we assume with 73% certainty that Tommy Stevens is going to be your starting quarterback at Mississippi State, do you have more questions about the quarterback position with him in charge? Or the pieces around him? other than the quarterback in year two.
Who's going to be shoveling the ball to Tommy Stevens if he's the one taking the snap? That's a pretty big question. Yeah, the secondary concerns me because I think Ole Miss is going to do a good job, and we'll get to that, even though they're not going to be good. I think they're doing a good job throwing the ball. Alabama's going to do a good job throwing the ball. I think Texas A&M is going to do a good job throwing the ball. So the secondary is an issue. To have Jonathan Abram back there like he was last year and not there this year, it's a big deal. It's a big deal to not have that. I'm confident in Bob Shoop. I think he's a very good defensive coordinator. I think he'll get things figured out. But with the quarterbacks that Mississippi State has on their schedule, yeah, I'm a little concerned with that secondary. I definitely am. And they don't have they're not going to have the pass rush that they had last year. So, yeah, that's the secondary is the secondary concern for me. The best case to me is that their very bad quarterback play ascends to average, because I don't think the ceiling is particularly high for either one of these guys. The defense doesn't drop off a lot, and they go 9-3. 9-3, Joe Moorhead. Worst case, I think, is 7-5. There's just too much there coming back and experienced and have won and hung in big games not to. Everything doesn't fully come together, but I think the variance is 7-9 wins.
Let me stay in the great state of Mississippi if I could.
Yeah.
Matt Luke, your boy.
I don't know where that came from, but no, sure, why not? He seems okay.
5-7 last year at Ole Miss. And in the offseason, went out, he hired Rich Rodriguez, Mike McIntyre, trying a little bit of a reboot, Dan. Feels a little bit like the Homer at the Bat episode where Daryl Strawberry and Mike Socha and Wade Boggs just show up.
Yeah.
Ready to make magic.
Love Wade Boggs.
Which of these two guys, Rich Rodriguez, Mike McIntyre, do you think has the most immediate impact?
So I went through Ole Miss position by position group and tried to figure out where they were stronger, you know, what Rich Rod offenses have looked like, what Mike McIntyre defenses have looked like, where they've thrived position group wise. And it seems pretty obvious to me that it's going to be offense in Rich Rod, just because he has been successful everywhere, even with quarterbacks new to his system that have been young, as Matt Corral is. Matt Corral did look pretty good, by the way, last year in limited spot duty when nothing was really on the line, but looked pretty good. Athletic, threw a nice ball. I like Scotty Phillips as a running back. He has upside. There's a lot of youth at receiver, but blue chip type receivers. The line's pretty green, but I think Rich Rodda can do a pretty good job of mitigating things like that just with scheme. My notes for the defense and what Mike McIntyre has here after, you know, speeding through a bunch of Ole Miss games on the defensive side of the ball and looking at some of the numbers and reminding myself, they're moving to a 3-4. There's experience up front, but not that good. And then linebacker, I have written down here, there are humans here. And then for defensive back, I have written, there are also humans here. There are players who will wear uniforms and will go to certain parts of the field in which they're assigned at linebacker and defensive back, but the talent is too far away for Ole Miss to feel anything about Mike McIntyre's defense in year one. So I'm going to say offense to that.
By default, yeah.
By default, schedule, we're going to see a lot of points. I think they travel to Memphis. They have a Cal-Alabama 1-2, which is very funny and unique. They have a bye sandwich between Texas A&M and traveling to the Plains, and then a bye sandwich between LSU and the Egg Bowl, which is on the road this year. So I don't know. They could start 4-0, win some shootouts, sneak up on, you know, somebody with a little more balance on offense, 6-6, 7-5. I don't think they're going to be worse than 4-8 because the offense should be better. It was kind of uneven last year. But yeah, I think it's at best bowl flirtation.
Bowl flirtation. Okay.
Yeah. And it's Rich Rod. The answer is Rich Rod.
Give me some of that SEC East love, Dan.
I would love to, Ty. Thanks for asking. You want to talk about South Carolina?
I do.
You're talking about Kentucky?
I want to talk about both, but let's start with South Carolina.
All right. South Carolina, a fun team in that they played lots of fun games. They were crazy competitive, you know, winning by 4, losing by 3 every week. And that was generally because the offense was clearly improved with turnovers that were horribly timed, it seemed. And a defense that took a pretty significant step back, which was, I think, a good reason was injuries. And so hopefully the, you know, injuries build depth thing comes through for South Carolina.
Yeah.
So South Carolina at full operating capacity, healthier and less mistake prone, are the Gamecocks being slept on as not an East crown type team, but a real danger to everybody in the East?
Good question. Yeah. I do. I think they're being slept on as a dangerous team, but not one that will win the East. And I think the primary reason for that is because of the brutal schedule, which we'll talk about momentarily. It's nuts.
Yeah.
That's ultimately going to limit them. But specifically, if you look at South Carolina, 6-5 last year because they had that one game canceled.
Mm-hmm.
If they can cut down on the turnovers on offense, they had 21 last year. That's
some of that's
lot.
Bad luck. Some of that's bad
luck. Some of that's bad luck, but that's just a lot. It's not all luck. Yeah. Jake Bentley threw 14 picks. That was the most in the SEC. Some bad luck, yes. Not all bad luck. That's a lot of picks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if he can just, I don't know, cut that back a little bit, somehow, some way, that gives you more drives, that gives you better scoring potential, it makes your offense better. I'd start there. To me, it's a leap that they're going to fix it all in one offseason. Even if they get marginally better, I don't think it's something that you can fix overnight. So that is something I will be watching right from the jump with South Carolina. The bright spot on offense, though, is that the line looks really good. And that can help. That can help with not only moving the football, but obviously keeping the football with you when you have it.
Added Tavian Feaster. A deeper backfield. Yeah.
So I like the line. And I really like South Carolina as a whole. I like what they have coming back. You mentioned about the injuries building depth. And nowhere is that more prevalent than on defense. Because the injury bug for South Carolina last year was super problematic. The injuries, you would assume, are going to build some depth now. Because a lot of the younger guys, they did get experience. That should help them this season. I have real questions about the secondary, though, because they're really young back there. They're going to have to figure it out pretty quickly. But all in all, I like this team. I really like this team. It's just the schedule. From the West, they draw Alabama and a road game against A&M. Oof. They close out the year at home against Clemson. They're also on the road at Georgia and Tennessee. Mm. And then they get Florida at home. There are other games in there, Dan, that we could mention. But those are the ones that jumped out at me. I don't care how much talent you have.
They have App State.
They have App State, which is
not a
pushover.
They have App State before they go to College Station. I mean, I don't think they're going to look ahead, even though App State has a new coach. But that's not anywhere near like, all right, late in the season, we'll throw somebody in there as like a guppy before we finish with A&M and Clemson. No, that's a real team.
That is a real team.
Yeah.
And so my point here is, much like we discussed with Florida, this is a team that could improve by leaps and bounds and still have a suboptimal record. Maybe they won't go 6-5, 6-6. Maybe it's only 7-5 or 8-4.
But if they're a danger, if they're a significant danger, they should win 8 games. Now, that schedule's rough. But
schedule's brutal. They will get somebody. They're going to get somebody.
Who should they beat? Who should they beat if they are, quote unquote, a significant danger to everybody they play? They were not that last year.
I'm pulling up the schedule here.
Yeah. So they should beat North Carolina. Mack Brown year one.
Yeah.
Agree?
Agreed.
Should they beat Charleston Southern?
Yes.
I'm going to say so, yes. You're not a significant danger if you get killed by Alabama, but that's okay.
Sure.
They should probably beat Mizzou on the road if they're a significant danger.
If they're a significant danger, I would agree with that.
Because Mizzou is at that point where they're a significant danger, right?
Yes, this season.
Oh, man, this is going to be such a good movie. Significant Danger, starring Jake Bentley.
They should beat Kentucky if they're...
They should beat Kentucky.
If again, qualifier, if they are that significant threat.
They should be in it against Georgia. They were not in it last year. They should be in it against Georgia if they are a significant danger.
I think they lose to Florida, but keep it close.
Okay.
They should, again, by our little hypothetical here, beat Tennessee on the road, beat Vandy, beat App State. A&M, I could go either way. I don't.
Very
think
least,
beat.
Hang with A&M.
Hang with Close A&M and probably lose to Clemson.
Right.
So in and of itself, that's like what? 8-4?
I think so. Yeah, you can excuse Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson. And then you throw in a loss against whoever, Florida, A&M. But 8-4 means that, wow, okay. At 8-4, hanging and winning. They can't let somebody run away from them. That's all it is to me. They have to be week in, week out. Because that offense really did, when it was rolling and they didn't shoot themselves in the foot, we're talking about a team who threw on Clemson impressively. I wouldn't go as far as saying hanging, but they hung for a long time against Clemson.
Yeah, it's true.
They put 50 on a bad Ole Miss team. They beat Tennessee again. They lost last second to A&M. They did not look competitive against Kentucky. And so really just looking better against Georgia, beating Kentucky, and hanging with some of the other teams. They hung with Florida. That to me is significant danger, and that to me is an improvement. And Florida had to come back to win that game last year. So no more giving away those 50-50 types.
All right. Give me some of that sweet Kentucky love here, Dan.
All right. So Kentucky had a magical season last year. And that season benefited from having probably the country's most gravitational pass rusher in Josh Allen, and had a great secondary behind him. It's a terrific combination. And an offense that could generally count on Benny Snell to carry a load that the passing game 100% to me could not. So if we're to assume the best way for Kentucky to win again this year, to look comparable to last year, is finding a way to replicate this strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you believe in the new guys who are going to have to be the new versions of secondary, Josh Allen, Benny Snell, whoever? Because I don't think you're super high on Terry Wilson, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, we actually got a question at the live show about Terry Wilson.
Want to like him. Really do.
I do.
Not that good.
I do. And I do look back and lament a little bit that I was unfair to him in spots.
Yeah.
Because he really was better than perhaps I knew. He had some moments, Dan. He had some moments.
Okay.
Do I believe in the new guys? Mark Stoops believes in the new guys. He's pretty high on the new guys.
What?
At running back, he's pretty high on him.
A coach is high on his team?
I know. Surprise, surprise. Mark Stoops feels very good about their running back situation. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're getting rid of Benny Snell. Getting rid of. They don't want
getting
to get
rid of
him.
Wow, damn.
He has to leave. He's out of eligibility.
Yeah.
He had more than 3,800 yards and 48 touchdowns on the ground. And then, of course, Josh Allen, 31 and a half career sacks, 17 just last year.
Unbelievable.
Which is nuts. That's a lot to replace. So who replaces Snell? The guy is AJ Rose that you should listen for. He's going to take a stab at it. He's about 2 inches taller and 15 pounds lighter than Benny Snell. 79 carries last year, 6.6 yards per carry. He's going to be your primary guy. They got some others in there, like Chris Rodriguez and Travis Tisdale and Cavassier Smoke, which is a great name.
Great name.
Each of them brings a different skill set that could help. But I don't think any one of those guys is going to be able to replace Benny Snell. No chance. I'm curious to see how they rotate these guys in and out, use them in different packages, try to get the same production from that running back position. Because it can't all be on the arm of Terry Wilson. He's a good runner, needs to improve as a passer, wasn't really a threat as a passer last year.
That's what you want to hear about your quarterback. Good runner. When it came to throwing, nobody was super scared.
Had flashes.
Yeah.
He did. But on the whole, to say that he's like this sort of aerial threat, I can't say that. All right. So that's the first thing. On the Josh Allen side, I don't know how you replace that. Mark Stoops would
be pretty great if he suddenly were, though.
It would.
Terry Wilson. That'd be great.
It would. Mark Stoops seems to think that Boogie Watson can do it.
Mm.
And he's a big kid. He's like 6'4", 230. He did make an impact in limited action last year. So perhaps there is room for him to grow and step into that role that is now vacated by Josh Allen. It's just one of those things that I need to see to believe.
Yeah. Josh Allen's special.
He really was. I mean, it was such a banner year for Kentucky last year. 9-3 regular season, 10-3 with the win over Penn State in the bowl game. Like, what a great season for Mark Stoops. He had been building to this for quite some time. He finally got
recruited well, developed well.
Some great talent. If you look at the secondary, another area where I have some question marks, five guys from that backfield were either drafted or signed as undrafted free agents. That's a lot.
Wow. That's a good amount. That secondary was really good. Yeah,
it was. And Mark Stoops, he likes the talent he has coming back this season, but he knows it's going to take some time to get it right. And then the other question, I hate to come back to this, but to what end can Terry Wilson improve as a passer? We know he's a hell of a runner.
Mm-hmm.
He can be more of a force in the passing game and get the ball downfield to our boy Lynn Bowden Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Just a suggestion. I hope he can do it. But again, I need to wait to reserve judgment. So I look at the schedule with Kentucky. I think I feel pretty good about the talent coming back. My biggest issue is, as you mentioned at the top, the two big guns are gone from a year ago. They got at Mississippi State, at South Carolina, at Georgia. Not the worst schedule as SEC East schedules go. Mm-hmm. I could see this team going 8-4 pretty easily.
Well, pretty easily.
Yeah. I like
Kentucky. By the way, Lynn Bowden might see some time under center playing some quarterback.
Terrific.
Tricky dicky. Yeah. 8-4 means they are beating one of these teams. Mizzou, like they did last year, asterisk, Georgia, Mississippi State, Florida, South Carolina. It's a pretty good schedule. You are right. So Florida, Mississippi State, Georgia, Mizzou are the easiest losses to see.
Yeah.
If they're going 8-4, that means they're beating South Carolina, Arkansas, shocker, Tennessee, Vandy. Okay. It's actually a nice schedule. They have Toledo, who's been good.
It's a good schedule.
I don't have the Toledo, you know, depth chart in front of me right now.
Yeah. It's a good schedule, Dan. If they beat the teams they're supposed to beat,
mm-hmm.
8-4 is right there.
Okay. And their undoing will probably be they just aren't as good as last year.
Most likely.
Understandable. They were really good. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have the bell cow in Benny Snell. You certainly don't have the
just
defensive
the
presence,
defense.
The gravitational
yeah.
force, as you referred to him.
Yeah.
Josh Allen.
All right. Where are we going next?
Okay. Let's go to Texas A&M.
Let's stick with the impossible schedules.
Defense. Defense, defense.
Mm-hmm.
Something of a mixed bag, one would say, for A&M this season. The line seems like it's got a ton of potential, but then you've got pretty significant losses everywhere else. And this is already a pretty questionable pass defense last season. Also,
to say the least,
also a murderous schedule that we'll get into here. Are you of the mindset that Mike Elko, I don't know, can spin some magic, that he's got the horses in the secondary to figure this thing out before long? Or are we still like a year or so away from seeing better play in that secondary defensive backfield?
I think we're a year away.
Really?
I think there's experience there, but this is experience that got worked over. So it's finding new faces, whoever those people are. The good news is that they've recruited up front really well. So maybe they don't have as much of a responsibility that they, you know, the line can get to the quarterback, whatever, because linebacker is also a question. They're pretty green at linebacker. So I'm not there. I'm not there with A&M with that schedule. So it's Trevor Lawrence, Tua Tagovailoa, Jake Fromm, and then whatever, you know, I'm pretty confident in giving the benefit of the doubt to Mississippi State that they're going to have a good offense with Joe Moorhead. Not great, but good this year. I think LSU is going to be improved offensively. They have weapons on the outside. It's tough. Auburn should be more creative and more dangerous than they were last year. I'm just not there with this secondary. I hope to be wrong, because that would mean that we get a crazy competitive Clemson game in week two.
Right.
They were 2 points away?
They played them tight last year.
Kind of a funny play away
last
year, and they returned those receivers. They returned Kellen Mond. You know, Travion Williams is gone, but I like Jashaun Corbin. I think he's a little bit more all-purpose than Travion Williams was. I think they're going to be good on the line, but they're going to need to win some 38-35s to really have me confident.
They will,
but yeah, they're the clear, you know, 7-5, but look like a 9-3 team a lot of the time. So because I phrased it like that. 9-3 is my best case scenario for this brutal schedule.
It is brutal, incredibly brutal. By the way,
yeah,
four of the top six preseason teams, three of which are on the road.
Not great.
That is not an easy schedule. And I don't care if you're Clemson. I don't care if you're Alabama. Right. That is a really tough draw. And it's interesting to kind of lay that on top of the fact that so many people are really high on A&M this year. Yeah. I've been surprised at how high folks are on the Aggies, if only because the schedule is just murderous. It's impossible. Even if they improve by leaps and bounds, it's still somewhat limiting.
Well, it's Jimbo with a good offensive roster and focus and care, we think. And that's, you know, a high level combination. So I like Kellen Mond, but he was too all over the place last year for me to feel great. He looked incredible against Clemson. And then we saw, I think it was October, some real down weeks from him. So, I mean, the best case is 9-3. And that means it's Clemson without their crazy pass rush that they had last year that he threw all over Clemson last year.
Sure. He did.
That it's ascending to, because he was sort of average last year. It's ascending to very good. It's getting improvement from the secondary, which I'm not hopeful for, but happily wrong. And the worst case to me, I don't think they go less than and lower than 7-5. And that to me means Kellen Mond is fine, but not good enough to win 8 or 9 games in the SEC West against LSU, Georgia, Alabama, Auburn. These are crazy defensive lines.
It's tough.
I don't see it. So I think there's wide variability there. So I'm looking at 7-5 as not a crazy outcome.
All right, Dan, your final question here in the SEC West. I want you to make this one count, okay?
You know I will.
I want to talk to you about Arkansas.
I can't wait.
Arkansas went 2-10 last year.
Mm-hmm.
But they were feisty.
You're not wrong.
They were feisty, particularly against LSU and A&M.
Yep. Close calls that they blew.
I'm not going to zoom in on any one position group because clearly there were deficiencies across the board for the Razorbacks.
Mm-hmm.
I just want the general lay of the land here.
Okay.
What is your sense for the direction of this program after 2018? Do you think we're closer to something that resembles more of a competitive squad? Are we still kind of in the midst of a slow rebuild? Where's your heart on Arkansas?
I should point out, they didn't blow the A&M LSU games, but those were close calls. They blew the games against Ole Miss and Colorado State.
Yes, correct.
What I'm feeling about Arkansas is similar to what you feel when you spy on the construction workers building your patio right now.
Okay.
You just want to be seeing that, okay, there's grout going down. Okay, tiles are going in. All right, I see they're putting the gas line, working on some plumbing, irrigation. You just want to see that progress. You want to see that things are moving towards the final product.
This is an excellent metaphor, and I'll tell you why.
Thank you. Because you're watching it as we speak?
I was actually watching it shortly before I came up to the studio, but...
Oh, okay. I thought you were like, I was watching it while you were going on and on about, you know, Justin Jefferson.
No. They've left for the day.
Okay.
But as with Arkansas, I think a lot of the work, at least in my backyard, has taken place underground. It's not been the kind of stuff that you can see with the naked eye. It's been a lot of infrastructure. It's been getting that layer of topsoil to the place where you can actually put something on top of it, strip it away, put some rocks, lay some pavers, that deal.
Yeah.
Is Arkansas to a point now where they've finished the underlying drainage issues and are ready to start laying some techo block pavers?
Also, John Chavis is your contractor. So that's
correct. Yes.
That's a good 1-2 comparison. It's apples to apples. Yeah, so the baseline, you had a backyard. Arkansas had a bad 2018. They couldn't run. And I like Ricky and Boyd, but as a team, they were not a good rushing team. They definitely couldn't pass with Ty Story and Cole Kelly. They were bad on third down. They were bad in the red zone. They did generate some bigger plays, which I think is a nice foundation. Defensively, they couldn't stop the run, but they weren't abysmal against the pass. Yeah, they were abysmal. Yes, they were. But like, you know, the foundation you're describing, they did a decent enough job at stopping bigger plays, which, as we know from Bill C's five factors, you win the explosion battle, you're winning a lot. So that's a good start. Quarterback wise, at the time of recording, I think it's going to be Nick Starkel, but he's competing with Ben Hicks, who transferred from SMU. Nick Starkel, he loses the job to Kellen Mond at A&M, transfers to Arkansas. Rakeem Boyd is back. There's returning production behind him. They're okay at receiver. You know, they have blue chips coming in, which is promising. I know everybody's going to be paying attention there. It's hard to know where the receivers stand because quarterback play was so bad.
Yeah, it was.
So I can't fully make a judgment call there. I like that they've recruited well and that there's early playing time opportunity there. Offensive line's a huge question. They don't have the experience, and I don't know if they have the talent. We'll see. We'll see if Chad Morris can scheme around it. The good news for Arkansas, they have two legitimate all-SEC players on defense. McTelvin Aguim comes back, clearly a star, wrecked shop on the inside last year for the Hogs, and you know, the inside should be nice. You know, defensive ends are a question. And then Dijon Harris is at linebacker everywhere. So as a starting point, the fact that they're good up front, up the middle, I like a lot with John Chavis calling the plays. The secondary is the green. It's a question. I think they're probably going to get worked over more often than not this year. But starting point, yes, very nice with Aguim and Harris. So schedule-wise, not a bad place. There's a part of me that thinks with Portland State, you know, going to Oxford, Colorado State, and San Jose State, they could start out 4-0, which good for Arkansas.
Right.
Get all of those wins. October and early November is Auburn at Alabama and Mississippi State consecutively. Not great. So with that 4-0 possibility in mind, I think their best case scenario is they make a bowl. Best absolute winning 50-50 games. Nick Starkel or whoever comes in and looks competent compared to where they were last year. The defense improves to not good, but not horrible. And the worst case scenario is 3-9. There's a reason Nick Starkel and Ben Hicks didn't work out at their previous places, and the defense still just doesn't have enough dudes. So a pretty wide swing. But I think they could schedule their way to a bowl, which important first step, laying the grout, laying the irrigation.
Yeah.
And they're not in a place to fully grill. They're not in a place to entertain.
Right.
But they're happier and happier checking that nest.
Sounds good.
Okay.
I like it. We got one team left here, Dan. Lay it on me.
All right. So the Toledo Rockets. No. We have the most important team in the SEC. Right?
The Doors, baby.
The Doors. Last year was the first year, I looked this up, of Derek Mason's tenure at Vanderbilt, in which neither the offense nor the defense in the same season were full-on embarrassing. Yes, they were not great. Sometimes they were just bad. But overall, neither the offense nor the defense was full-on embarrassing over the course of the season as a whole. Was that a sign of things to come? Can they get to below average or average on both sides? Or was last year a ceiling with, you know, an upperclassman quarterback and Kyle Shurmur, and I guess a culmination of whatever it is that right. Derek Mason is doing there?
I think it was a culmination of some kind.
Okay, so they're about to get worse somewhere.
They're gonna get worse this year.
Okay.
But it shouldn't overshadow what Derek Mason's done in Nashville. Two bowl games in 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal for this Vandy program. There's clearly buy-in among the players. The offense was pretty good last year. The issue that they encounter now in 2019 is that Kyle Shurmur's gone. And yeah, they've also got an issue with three guys on the line needing to be replaced. Five of their six top tacklers on defense and Juwan Williams in the defensive backfield left.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot to try and replace. Especially when you look at a schedule that sees them open the year at home against Georgia, trial by fire.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a road game at Purdue, which, you know, I'm not super high on Purdue, but could be tricky early.
Yep.
We've got LSU. We've got a road game against Florida, a road game against Tennessee in there. I don't know what to expect from this team.
Well, they own the state. Let's be clear. Vanderbilt owns the state.
They do own the state, sure.
Yeah.
But I feel better about Tennessee in that game than I do Vandy. They will play Tennessee tight.
Okay.
They will play them tight. I think 6-6, 7-5 is probably doable. Mm-hmm. I just have so many questions about that quarterback position. When you lose a guy like Kyle Shermer, who granted wasn't the best quarterback on earth, but led a pretty good offense last year. They were
step up from where they had been previous.
Yeah, they were like fourth in the SEC. So
I don't know what metric you're using for that, but okay.
I understand. I get it. I'm with you. I'm just trying to find a way to give them benefit of the doubt here, knowing that they've got a lot of losses. And right. I'm struggling with it. I'm feeling like 6-6 is probably where this team ends up in 2019.
So Vanderbilt last year, offensively and defensively, they finished with a net points per drive, so offense minus defense, of like the most average team in the country. They finished 66th, 50th offense, and then 80th on defense. And that's improved from the previous year and way down still from the couple years before that. Another thing to note about Vanderbilt and bowl eligibility, they make the bowl last year. They lose to Baylor. Really fun running back in what's Keyshawn Vaughn.
Yeah, right.
They were right there against Kentucky. So that, you know, if they swing that 50-50 game, they go to what, 7-5. Right there against Mizzou. I think Mizzou has to come back to win that game. Yes, they do come back to win that game. So you're talking a limited number of plays away from, I mean, and a lot of teams can say this, of course.
Sure.
From 8 wins. They embarrassingly lost, and this is going to happen when you don't have the talent level. They lose to a Notre Dame team that doesn't score a touchdown in the playoff by 5 points.
How dare you.
But can't have that. Vandy's not far off. They just, they don't have the high end of talent. And no, I would expect, without, I mean, you did the deep dive on this team, so you would know better than I. It's weird for me to think about Derek Mason having a defense that isn't at least average with where some of his previous defenses at both Vandy and Stanford were. So, and how they've started out seasons, but subsequently blown. I would hope for Vandy's sake that they're more competitive there. Because then it becomes a little bit more interesting. Because I never liked Andy Ludwig, even with Vandy ascending pretty nicely on offense last year.
It could be addition by subtraction as he moves on.
Yeah, but they promoted from within, so who knows?
All right. Well, there you go, Dan. There is our SEC preview. You had the West. I had the East. Please do write in. Let us know your thoughts on the state.
We have Alabama,
SEC.
Georgia.
I think so. Do you?
Yeah, I think so too. I think if I'm going to stick with my guns of quarterback and defense, I think those are the answers.
I would agree. I don't think in this case there's a need to overthink it. Big surprise in the East.
Yeah.
Does Missouri count as a surprise?
No. It would be Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Tennessee as legitimate surprises.
I would be more inclined to go Tennessee.
Okay. In the West, I would say, actually, who would be a surprise in the West to you? Ole Miss? Yes, would be a surprise. Arkansas? Yes, would be a surprise. Anybody else that you would consider a surprise?
It could be a surprise. A surprise in the other direction. Maybe if LSU falls short.
Oh, good call. Okay. My surprise is Auburn isn't great.
Okay.
That would be my, because I can't buy in on Ole Miss. A&M schedule is, they're neither good nor bad in my eyes right now. They have the potential to be good, but I got to see more. So yeah, Auburn disappointing and losing some of those 50-50 games is my surprise.
All right. Well, there you have it. We are going to post our Fantasy Things show on Sunday. We are planning, as of recording now, to do what, our group of 5 questions preview.
Yes.
Which will be released on Tuesday morning. Mm-hmm. And then check your feed on Thursday morning, bright and early.
Yes.
In time for your morning commute, we will post the week 1 preview that everyone's excited for. We will probably, I'm assuming, talk about week 0 after the fact.
Yeah.
If that's okay with you, not enough games to do a full preview. And honestly, it's so difficult to do these preview shows in week 1 anyway. We'd probably be doing both Florida and Miami a disservice. I'd kind of like to see what they have before I talk about them.
Can we give them a disservice so we're on the record, though?
I mean, If you want to put your neck out there, you're allowed to. Sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Miami is a 7.5 point dog at home, which means that you can, you know, search and scour for an appropriate sound if you have the soundboard in front of you. And Hawaii is an 11-point dog at home. So you have not looked up. There it is.
The Yakos. Home dog of the week.
I'm not touching either of these home dogs with a 10-foot pole.
Other home dogs you can touch in... I'm making sure these are all week zero. You can... You can touch Youngstown State Samford. Samford, dog against Bo Pelini.
Okay.
And Villanova Colgate. Colgate, the Gators, a favorite against, what's Villanova, the Wildcats?
Yes.
You like the Gators? This is Patriot League action.
I don't know. It's a little early for that, Dan.
Okay.
Our Patriot League preview is still forthcoming.
Here's my neck. I'm going to take the points. I think Miami covers at home. Florida wins.
All right.
Good defense at home.
God bless you.
And it's going to be a difficult place to play because everybody is focusing on this game and it's Miami. They're going to show out for this game. I don't know about later games, but good defense at home. I'm taking the points. It's one of my rules. Let's do it.
And as a tease, we'll just say that Manny Diaz is bringing the swag back to swagger back to Miami.
Always bringing it back. And we get Khalil Tate and JJ Taylor on the islands.
It'll be fun. All right. Yeah. We're going to go. We're going to post fantasy things this weekend. Group of five and week one previews coming next week, as well as we get ready to officially flip it into high gear here on the show. Don't forget, if you haven't already, subscribe now, either on Apple Podcasts or wherever.
It does make a difference.
Doesn't make any difference. People actually asked that question at the live show. Does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. Just
wait. No. Hold on. It doesn't. I think it does.
I don't care how they listen. I just want people to listen. Wherever
well,
it's
I want
easiest.
People to subscribe and listen.
Well, you can subscribe. Sure. I'd love a subscription.
That'd actually, even more important, this is the time when, and it's not even just about college football podcasts. You know, podcasts have become so popular. A conversation seems to be wherever you are. If you're on a double date, if you're just chilling in the conference room at work before a meeting where people are BSing and they talk, maybe you listen to podcasts like, oh, do you have any recommendations? Throw our name out there. Throw the Solid Verbal into that conversation.
Little word of mouth. That's,
if you can do that, we'd be more appreciative about that than subscribing. How about that?
All right. That sounds good. For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt, we will catch you all in a few days, sometime this weekend. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week, all of your weekend, and stay solid.
Peace.